Star Wars, Heir to the Empire, by Timothy Zahn. Continued. Cassette number 10, side 2. Master Luke wants you to hold off the attack, 3PO said, obviously relieved that someone was finally listening to him. He says you're to wait until the stormtroopers are at the arch before firing. Aves twisted around. What? That's crazy. They outnumber us 3-1. We give them any chance at all at cover, and they'll cut us to pieces. Lando looked out the window, grinding his teeth together. Aves was right. He knew enough of ground tactics to realize that. But, on the other hand, they're awfully spread out there, he said. Cover or no cover, they're going to be hard to take out, especially with those speeder bikes on their perimeter. Aves shook his head. It's crazy, he repeated. I'm not going to risk my people that way. Luke knows what he's doing, Lando insisted. He's a Jedi. He's not a Jedi now, Aves snorted. Didn't Carda explain about the Isalamiri? Whether he has Jedi powers or not, he's still a Jedi, Lando insisted. His blaster, he realized suddenly, was pointed at Aves. But that was okay, because Aves' blaster was pointed at him, too. Anyway, his life is more on the line here than any of yours. You can always abort and pull back. Oh, sure, Aves snorted, throwing a glance out the window. The Imperials were nearing the middle of the square now, Lando saw, the stormtroopers looking wary and alert as anything. Except that if we leave any of them alive, they'll seal off the city. And what about that chariot up there? What about it? Lando countered. I still haven't heard how you're planning to take it out. Well, we sure as blazes don't want it on the ground, Aves retorted. And that's what'll happen if we let the stormtroopers get to the arch. The chariot'll put down right across the front of it, right between us and them. That, plus the arch itself, will give them all the cover they need to sit back and take us out at their leisure. He shook his head and shifted his grip on the transmitter. Anyway, it's too late to clue in the others to any plan changes. You don't have to clue them in, Lando said, feeling sweat collecting under his collar. Luke was counting on him. No one's supposed to do anything until you trigger the booby-trapped weapons. Aves shook his head again. It's too risky. He turned back to the window, raised the transmitter. And here, Lando realized, right here was where it all came down to the wire, where you decided who or what it was you trusted. Tactics, an abstract logic, or people. Lowering his blaster, he gently rested the tip of the muzzle against Aves' neck. We wait, he said quietly. Aves didn't move, but suddenly there was something in the way he crouched there that reminded Lando of a hunting predator. I won't forget this, Calrissian, he said, his voice icy soft. I wouldn't want you to, Lando said. He looked out at the stormtroopers and hoped that Luke did indeed know what he was doing. The vanguard had already passed the archway, and the major was only a few steps away from it, when four of the stormtroopers abruptly blew up. Quite spectacularly, too. The simultaneous flashes of yellow-white fire lit up the landscape to almost painful intensity. The thunderclap of the multiple detonations nearly knocked Luke over. The sound was still ringing in his ears when the blasters opened up behind him. The stormtroopers were good, all right. There was no panic that Luke could detect, no sudden freezing in astonishment or indecision. They were moving into combat position almost before the blaster fire had begun. Those already at the archway, hugging close to the stone pillars to return covering fire, the rest moving quickly to join them. Above the sound of the blasters, he could hear the increased whine of the speeder bikes kicking into high speed. Overhead, he caught just a glimpse of the chariot assault vehicle swiveling around to face the unseen attackers. And then an armored hand caught him under each armpit. And suddenly he was being hauled toward the archway. A few seconds later, he was dumped unceremoniously in the narrow gap between the two pillars supporting the north side of the arch. Mara was already crouched there. A second later, two more stormtroopers tossed Han in to join them. Four of the Imperials moved into position over them, using the pillars for cover as they began returning fire. Struggling to his knees, Luke leaned out for a look. Out in the fire zone, looking small and helpless amid the deadly horizontal hail of blaster fire, R2 was rolling toward them as fast as his little wheels would carry them. "I think we're in trouble," Han muttered in his ear. "Not to mention Lando and the others." "It's not over yet," Luke told him tightly. "Just stick close. How are you at causing distractions?" "Terrific," Han said. And to Luke's surprise, he brought his hands out from behind his back, the chain and manacles he'd been wearing hanging loosely from his left wrist. "Trick cuffs," he grunted, pulling a concealed strip of metal from the inside of the open cuff and probing at Luke's restraints. "I hope this thing..." "Ah." The pressure on Luke's wrists was suddenly gone. The cuffs opened and dropped to the ground. "You ready for your distraction?" Han asked, taking the loose end of his chain in his free hand. "Hang on a minute," Luke told him, looking up. Most of the speeder bikes had taken refuge under the arch, looking like some strange species of giant birds hiding from a storm as they hovered close to the stone, their laser cannon spitting toward the surrounding houses. In front of them, and just below their line of fire, the chariot had swiveled parallel to the arch and was coming down. Once it was on the ground, a hand gripped Luke's arm, fingernails digging hard into the skin. "Whatever you're going to do, do it," Mara hissed viciously. "If the chariot gets down, you'll never get them out from cover." "I know," Luke nodded. "I'm counting on it." The chariot settled smoothly to the ground directly in front of the arch, blocking the last of the attackers' firing vectors. Crouched at the window, Ave swore violently. "Well, there's your Jedi for you," he bit out. "You got any other great ideas, Calrissian?" Lando swallowed hard. "We've just got to give him..." He never finished the sentence. From the arch, a blaster bolt glanced off the window frame, and suddenly Lando's upper arm flashed with pain. The shock sent him stumbling backwards, just as a second shot blew apart that whole section of the frame, driving wooden splinters and chunks of masonry like shrapnel across his chest and arm. He hit the floor, landing hard enough to see stars. Blinking, gritting his teeth against the pain, he looked up, to find Avis leaning over him. Lando looked up into the other's face. "I won't forget this," Avis had said no more than 3 minutes ago. And from the look on his face, he wasn't anticipating any need to hold that memory for much longer. "He'll come through," Lando whispered through the pain. "He will." But he could tell that Avis wasn't listening. And down deep, Lando couldn't blame him. Lando Calrissian, the professional gambler, had gambled one last time, and he'd lost. And the debt from that gamble, the last in a long line of such debts, had come due. The chariot settled smoothly to the ground directly in front of the arch, and Luke got his feet under him. This was it. "All right, Han," he muttered. "Go." Han nodded and surged to his feet, coming up right in the middle of the four stormtroopers standing over them. With a bellow, he swung his former shackles full across the faceplate of the nearest guard, then threw the looped chain around the neck of the next and pulled backwards, away from the pillars. The other two reacted instantly, leaping after him and taking the whole group down in a tangle. And for the next few seconds, Luke was free. He stood up and leaned out to look around the pillar. R2 was still in the middle of no man's land, hurrying to reach cover before he could be hit by a stray shot. He warbled plaintively as he saw Luke. R2, now, Luke shouted, holding out his hand and glancing across toward the southern end of the archway. Between the stone pillars and the grounded chariot, the stormtroopers were indeed solidly entrenched. If this didn't work, Han was right. Lando and everyone else out there were dead. Gritting his teeth, hoping fervently that his counterattack wasn't already too late, he turned back to R2. Just as, with a flicker of silver metal and perfect accuracy, his lightsaber dropped neatly into his outstretched hand. Beside him, the guards had subdued Han's crazy attack and were getting back to their feet, leaving Han on his knees between them. Luke took them all in a single sweep, the blazing green lightsaber blade slicing through the glistening stormtrooper armor with hardly a tug to mark its passing. "Get behind me," he snapped to Han and Mara, stepping back to the gap between the two northern pillars and focusing on the massive Imperials standing and crouching between him and the southern pillars. They were suddenly aware that they had an unexpected threat on their flank, and a few were already starting to bring their blasters to bear on him. With the Force to guide his hand, he could have held out against them indefinitely, blocking their blaster shots with the lightsaber. Mara had been right, though. The Salimiri effect did indeed extend this far outside the forest, and the Force was still silent. But then, he'd never had any intention of fighting the stormtroopers anyway. Turning his back on the blasters tracking toward him, he slashed the lightsaber across and upward, neatly slicing one of the stone pillars in half. There was a loud crack as suddenly released tension sent a shiver through the structure. Another stroke cut through the second pillar, and the noise of the battle was abruptly drowned out by the awful grinding of stone on stone as the two fractured pillars began sliding apart. Luke swung back around, peripherally aware of Han and Mara scrambling out from under the arch to safety behind him. The stormtroopers' expressions were hidden behind their masks, but the look of sudden horror on the Major's face said it for all of them. Overhead, the mass of the arch creaked warningly. Setting his teeth, Luke locked the lightsaber on and hurled it across the gap toward the pillars there. It cut through one of them and nicked the other. And with a roar, the whole thing came crashing down. Luke, standing at the edge, barely got out from under it in time. The stormtroopers, crouched in the center, didn't. Chapter 30. Carda walked around the mass of stone to where the crumpled nose of the chariot assault vehicle poked out, a sense of slightly stunned disbelief covering his vision. "One man," he murmured. "Well, we helped some," Aves reminded him. But the sarcasm of the words faded beneath the grudging respect clearly there behind it. "And without the Force, too," Carda said. He sensed Aves shrug uncomfortably. "That's what Mara said, though of course Skywalker might have lied to her about it." "Unlikely." A motion at the edge of the square caught his eye, and Carda looked over to see Solo and Skywalker helping a distinctly shaky-looking Lando Calrissian to one of the airspeeders parked around the perimeter. "Took a shot, did he?" Aves grunted. "Came close to taking one of mine, too," he said. "I thought he'd betrayed us. Figured I'd make sure he didn't walk away from it." "In retrospect, it's just as well you didn't." Carda looked up, searching the skies, wondering how long it would take the Imperials to respond to what had happened here today. Aves looked up, too. "We might still be able to hunt down the other two chariots before they get a chance to report," he suggested. "I don't think the headquarters people got any messages away before we took them out." Carda shook his head, feeling a deep surge of sadness rising through the sense of urgency within him. Not until now had he truly realized just how much he'd come to love this place. His base, the forest, the planet Mirker itself. Now, when there was no choice but to abandon it. No, he told Aves. There's no way to cover up our part in what happened here. Not from a man like Thrawn. You're probably right, Aves said, his voice taking on a sense of urgency of its own. He understood the implications of that, all right. You want me to head back and start the evacuation? Yes, and take Mara with you. Make sure she keeps busy, somewhere away from the Millennium Falcon and Skywalker's X-Wing. He felt Aves' eyes on him. But if the other wondered, he kept his wonderings to himself. Right. See you later. He hurried away. The airspeeder with Calrissian aboard was lifting off now, heading back to where the Falcon was being prepped for flight. Solo and Skywalker were heading over toward a second airspeeder. With just a moment's hesitation, Carda went over to intercept them. They reached the craft at the same time, and for a moment eyed each other across its bow. Carda, Solo said at last, I owe you one. Carda nodded. Are you still going to get the ether way out of impoundment for me? I said I would, Solo told him. Where do you want it delivered? Just leave it on Abrigado. Someone will pick it up. He turned his attention to Skywalker. An interesting little trick, he commented, tilting his head back toward the mass of rubble. Unorthodox, to say the least. Skywalker shrugged. It worked, he said simply. That it did, Carda agreed. Likely saving several of my people's lives in the bargain. Skywalker looked him straight back in the eye. Does that mean you've made your decision? Carda gave him a slight smile. I don't really see as I have much choice anymore. He looked back at Solo. I presume you'll be leaving immediately. As soon as we can get Luke's X-Wing rigged for towing, Solo nodded. Lando's doing okay, but he's going to need more specialized medical attention than the Falcon can handle. It could have been worse, Carda said. Solo gave him a knowing look. A lot worse, he agreed, his voice hard. So could all of it, Carda reminded him, putting an edge into his own voice. He could, after all, just as easily have turned the three of them over to the Imperials in the first place. And Solo knew it. Yeah, he conceded. Well, so long. Carda watched as they got into the airspeeder. One other thing, he said as they strapped in. Obviously, we're going to have to pull out of here before the Imperials figure out what's happened. That means a lot of lifting capacity if we're going to do it quickly. You wouldn't happen to have any surplus cargo or stripped-down military ships lying around I could have, would you? Solo gave him a strange look. We don't have enough cargo capacity for the New Republic's normal business, he said. I think I might have mentioned that to you. Well then, alone, perhaps, Carda persisted. A stripped-down Mon Calamari Star Cruiser would do nicely. I'm sure it would, Solo returned, with more than a hint of sarcasm. I'll see what I can do. The canopy dropped smoothly down over them and sealed in place. Carda stepped back, and with a whine of repulsor lifts, the airspeeder rose into the sky. Orienting itself, it shot off toward the forest. Carda watched it go, wondering if that last suggestion had been too little, too late. But perhaps not. Solo was the type to hold debts of honor sacred, something he'd probably picked up from his Wookiee friend somewhere along the line. If he could find a spare Star Cruiser, he'd likely send it along. And once here, it would be easy enough to steal from whatever handler Solo sent with it. Perhaps such a gift would help assuage Grand Admiral Thrawn's inevitable anger over what had happened here today. But then, perhaps it wouldn't. Carda looked back at the ruins of the collapsed arch, a shiver running through him. No, a warship wasn't going to help. Not on this. Thrawn had lost too much here to simply shrug it off as the fortunes of war. He would be back, and he would be coming for blood. And for perhaps the first time in his life, Carda felt the unpleasant stirrings of genuine fear. In the distance, the airspeeder disappeared over the forest canopy. Carda turned and gave Hilliard City one final lingering look. One way or the other, he knew he would never see it again. Luke got Lando settled into one of the Falcon's bunks, while Han and a couple of Carda's men busied themselves outside getting a tow cable attached to the X-Wing. The Falcon's medical package was fairly primitive, but it was up to the task of cleaning and bandaging a blaster burn. A complete healing job would have to wait until they could get him to a Bacta tank, but for the moment he seemed comfortable enough. Leaving R2 and 3PO to watch over him, despite his protestations that he didn't need watching over, and furthermore had had enough of 3PO, Luke returned to the cockpit just as the ship lifted off. "Any problems with the tow cable?" he asked, sliding into the co-pilot seat. "Not so far," Han said, leaning forward and looking all around them as the Falcon cleared the trees. "The extra weight's not bothering us anyway. We should be all right." "Good. You expecting company?" "You never know," Han said, giving the sky one last look before settling back into his seat and gunning the repulsor lifts. Carda said there were still a couple of chariots and a few speeder bikes unaccounted for. One of them might have figured that a last-ditch suicide run was better than having to go back to the Grand Admiral and report. Luke stared at him. "Grand Admiral?" he asked carefully. Han's lip twisted. "Yeah, that's who seems to be running the show now for the Empire." A cold chill ran up Luke's back. "I thought we'd accounted for all the Grand Admirals." "Me too. We must have missed one." And abruptly, right in the middle of Han's last word, Luke felt a surge of awareness and strength fill him. As if he were waking up from a deep sleep, or stepping from a dark room into the light, or suddenly understanding the universe again. The Force was again with him. He took a deep breath, eyes flicking across the control board for the altimeter. Just over 12 kilometers. Carda had been right. Those Isalamiri did indeed reinforce one another. "I don't suppose you got a name," he murmured. "Carda wouldn't give it to me," Han said, throwing a curious frown in Luke's direction. "Maybe we can bargain the use of that Star Cruiser he wants for it." "You okay?" "I'm fine," Luke assured him. It's like being able to see again after having been blind." Han snorted under his breath. "Yeah, I know how that is," he said wryly. "I guess you would." Luke looked at him. "I didn't get a chance to say this earlier, but thanks for coming after me." Han waved it away. "No charge. And I didn't get a chance to say it earlier." He glanced at Luke again. "But you look like something the Prume dragged in." "My wonderful disguise," Luke told him, touching his face gingerly. "Mara assures me it'll wear off in a few more hours." "Yeah, Mara," Han said. "You and she seem to be hitting it off pretty well there." Luke grimaced. "Don't count on it," he said. "A matter of having a common enemy, that's all. First the Forest, then the Imperials." He could sense Han casting around for a way to ask the next question, decided to save him the trouble. "She wants to kill me," he told the other. "Any idea why?" Luke opened his mouth, and to his own surprise, closed it again. There wasn't any particular reason not to tell Han what he knew about Mara's past. Certainly no reason he could think of. And yet, somehow, he felt a strangely compelling reluctance to do so. "It's something personal," he said at last. Han threw him an odd look. "Something personal? How personal can a death mark get?" "It's not a death mark," Luke insisted. "It's something, well, personal." Han gazed at him a moment longer, then turned back to his piloting. "Oh," he said. The Falcon had cleared the atmosphere now and was gunning for deep space. From this high up, Luke decided, the forest looked rather pleasant. "You know, I never did find out what planet this was," he commented. "It's called Mirkur," Han told him, "and I just found out this morning. I think Karda must have already decided to abandon the place even before the battle. He had real tight security around it when Lando and I first got here." A few minutes later, a light flashed on the control board. The Falcon was far enough out of Mirkur's gravity well for the hyperdrive to function. "Good," Han nodded at it. "Course is already programmed in. Let's get out of here." He wrapped his hand around the central levers and pulled, and with a burst of starlines, they were off. "Where are we going?" Luke asked as the starlines faded into the familiar mottled sky. "Coruscant?" "A little side trip first," Han said. "I want to swing by the Sluis Van shipyards, see if we can get Lando and your X-Wing fixed up." Luke threw him a sideways glance. "And maybe find a Star Cruiser to borrow for Karda?" "Maybe," Han said, a little defensively. "I mean, Akbar's got a bunch of stripped-down warships ferrying stuff to the Sluis Sector already. No reason why we can't borrow one of them for a couple of days, is there?" "Probably not," Luke conceded with a sigh. Suddenly, it felt really good to just sit back and do nothing. "I suppose Coruscant can do without us for a few more days." "I hope so," Han said, his voice abruptly grim. "But something's about to happen back there, if it hasn't happened already." And his sense was as grim as his words. "Maybe we shouldn't bother with Sluis Van then," Luke suggested, feeling a sympathetic shiver. "Lando's hurting, but he's not in any danger." Han shook his head. "No, I want to get him taken care of. And you, buddy, need some downtime, too," he added, glancing at Luke. "I just wanted you to know that when we hit Coruscant, we're going to hit it running. So enjoy Sluis Van while you can. It'll probably be the last peace and quiet you'll get for a while." In the blackness of deep space, 3/1000ths of a light year out from the Sluis Van shipyards, the task force assembled for battle. "The Judicator has just reported in, Captain," the communications officer told Pelion. "They confirm battle ready and request order update." "Inform Captain Brandi that there have been no changes," Pelion told him, standing at the starboard viewport and gazing out at the shadowy shapes gathered around the Chimera, all but the closest identifiable only by the distinctive patterns of their running lights. "It was an impressive task force, worthy of the old days. I'm Brace Cruz, two of the old Tarek-class light cruisers, and 30 full squadron of TIE fighters standing ready in their hangar bays. And riding there in the middle of all that awesome firepower, like someone's twisted idea of a joke, set the battered old A-class bulk crater. The key to this whole operation."
"Status, Captain," Thrawn's voice came quietly from behind him.
Pelion turned to face the Grand Admiral. "All ships are online, sir," he reported. "The freighter's cloaking shield has been checked out and primed. All TIE fighters are prepped and manned. I think we're ready." Thrawn nodded, his glowing eyes sweeping the field of running lights around them.
"Excellent," he murmured. "What word from Mirkur?"
The question threw Pelion off stride. He hadn't thought about Mirkur for days.
"I don't know, Admiral," he confessed.
looking over Thrawn's shoulder at the communications officer. Lieutenant, the last report from the Mirker Landing Force? The other was already calling up the record. It was a routine report, sir, he said. Time log 14 hours 10 minutes ago. Thrawn turned to face him. 14 hours? He repeated, his voice suddenly very quiet and very deadly. I left orders for them to report every 12. Yes, Admiral, the comm man said, starting to look a little nervous. I have that order logged right here on their file. They must have... He trailed off, looking helplessly at Pelion. They must have forgotten to report in, was Pelion's first hopeful reaction. But it died stillborn. Stormtroopers didn't forget such things, ever. Perhaps they're having trouble with their transmitter, he suggested hesitantly. For a handful of heartbeats, Thrawn just stood there, silent. No, he said at last. They've been taken. Skywalker was indeed there. Pelion hesitated, shook his head. I can't believe that, sir, he said. Skywalker couldn't have taken all of them, not with all those Isalamiri blocking his Jedi power. Thrawn turned those glittering eyes back on Pelion. I agree, he said coldly. Obviously, he had help. Pelion forced himself to meet that gaze. Carda? Who else was there? Thrawn countered. So much for his protestations of neutrality. Pelion glanced at the status board. Perhaps we should send someone to investigate. We could probably spare a strike cruiser, maybe even the Stormhawk. Thrawn took a deep breath, let it out slowly. No, he said, his voice steady and controlled again. The Swiss van operation is our primary concern at the moment, and battles have been lost before on the presence or absence of a single ship. Carda and his betrayal will keep for later. He turned back to the communications officer. Signal the freighter, he ordered. Have them activate the cloaking shield. Yes, sir. Pelion turned back to the viewport. The freighter, bathed in the Chimera's lights, just sat there looking innocent. Cloaking shield on, Admiral, the comm man reported. Thrawn nodded. Order them to proceed. Yes, sir. Moving rather sluggishly, the freighter maneuvered past the Chimera, oriented itself toward the distant sun of the Swiss van system, and with a flicker of pseudo-velocity, jumped to light speed. Time mark, Thrawn ordered. Time marked, one of the deck officers acknowledged. Thrawn looked at Pelion. Is my flagship ready, Captain? He asked the formal question. The Chimera is fully at your command, Admiral. Pelion gave the formal answer. Good. We follow the freighter in exactly 6 hours 20 minutes. I want a final check from all ships, and I want you to remind them one last time that our task is only to engage and pin down the system's defenses. There are to be no special heroics or risks taken. Make that clearly understood, Captain. We're here to gain ships, not lose them. Yes, sir. Pelion started toward his command station. And Captain? Yes, Admiral? There was a tight smile on Thrawn's face. Remind them, too, he added softly, that our final victory over the rebellion begins here. Chapter 31. Captain Affion of the escort frigate Larkhess shook his head with thinly disguised contempt, glaring at Wedge from the depths of his pilot seat. You X-wing hotshots, he growled. You've really got it made, you know that? Wedge shrugged, trying hard not to take offense. It wasn't easy, but then he'd had lots of practice in the past few days. Appian had started out from Coruscant with a planetary mass chip on his shoulder, and he'd been nursing it the whole way. And looking out the viewport at the confused mass of ships crowding the Sluice Van orbit dock area, it wasn't hard to figure out why.
"Yeah, well, we're stuck out here, too," he reminded the captain.
The other snorted.
"Yeah, big sacrifice. You lounge around my ship like overpriced trampers for a couple of days, then flit around for 2 hours while I try to dodge bulk freighters and get this thing into a docking station designed for scavenger pickers. And then you pull your snubbies back inside and go back to lounging again. Doesn't exactly qualify as earning your pay in my book."
Wedge clamped his teeth firmly around his tongue and stirred his tea a little harder. It was considered bad form to mouth back at senior officers, after all, even senior officers who'd long since passed their prime. For probably the first time since he had been given command of Rogue Squadron, he regretted having passed up all the rest of the promotions he'd been offered. A higher rank would at least have entitled him to snarl back a little. Lifting his cup for a cautious sip, he gazed out the viewport at the scene around them. No, he amended, he wasn't sorry at all that he'd stayed with his X-Wing. If he hadn't, he'd probably be in exactly the same position as Affion was right now, trying to run a 920-crew ship with just 15 men, hauling cargo in a ship meant for war. And, like as not, having to put up with hotshot X-Wing pilots who sat around his bridge drinking tea and claiming with perfect justification that they were doing exactly what they'd been ordered to do. He hid a smile behind his mug. Yes, in Affion's place, he'd probably be ready to spit bulkhead shavings, too. Maybe he ought to go ahead and let the other drag him into an argument. In fact, let him drain off some of that excess nervous energy of his. Eventually, within the hour even, if Sluice Control's latest departure estimate was anywhere close, it would finally be the Larkus's turn to get out of here and head for Bafash. It would be nice when that time came for Affion to be calm enough to handle the ship. Taking another sip of his tea, Wedge looked out the viewport. A couple of refitted passenger liners were making their own break for freedom now, he saw, accompanied by 4 Corellian corvettes. Beyond them, just visible in the faint light of the space lane marker buoys, was what looked like one of the slightly ovoid transports he used to escort during the height of the war, with a pair of B-wings following. And off to the side, moving parallel to their departure vector, an A-class bulk freighter was coming into the docking pattern, without any escort at all. Wedge watched it creep toward them, his smile fading as old combat senses began to tingle. Swiveling around in his seat, he reached over to the console beside him and punched for a center scan. It looked innocent enough. An older freighter, probably a knockoff of the original Corellian Action 4 design, with the kind of exterior that came from either a lifetime of honest work or else a short and spectacularly unsuccessful career of piracy. Its cargo bay registered completely empty, and there were no weapons emplacements that the Larkus's sensors could pick up. A totally empty freighter. How long had it been, he wondered uneasily, since he'd run across a totally empty freighter? Trouble? Wedge focused on the captain in mild surprise. The other's frustrated anger of a minute ago was gone, replaced by something calm, alert, and battle-ready. Perhaps, the thought strayed through Wedge's mind, Affion wasn't past his prime after all. That incoming freighter, told the other, said he has come down on the edge of the console and keying for a comm channel. There's something about it that doesn't feel right. The captain peered out the viewport, then at the sensor scan data Wedge had pulled up. I don't see anything, he said. Me either, Wedge had to admit.
There's just something... Blast.
What?
Control won't let me in, Wedge told him as he keyed off. Too much traffic on the circuits already, they say.
Allow me.
Affion turned to his own console. The freighter was shifting course now, the kind of slow and careful maneuver that usually indicated a full load. But the cargo bay was still registering empty.
There we go, Affion said, glancing at Wade with grim satisfaction. I've a tap into your computer. Little trick you never learn, flitting around an X-wing.
Let's see now. Freighter Nartistu, out of Nalak Crime. They were jumped by pirates, got their main drive damaged in a fight, and had to dump their cargo to get away. They're hoping to get some repair work done. Space controls basically told them to get in line.
I thought all this relief shipping had more or less taken over the whole place, Wedge frowned.
Affion shrugged.
Theoretically.
In practice, well, the Sluicy are easy enough to talk into bending that kind of rule. You just have to know how to phrase the request.
Reluctantly, Wedge nodded.
It did all seem reasonable enough, he supposed, and the damaged, empty ship would probably handle something like an intact full one. And the freighter was empty. The Larkus's sensors said so. But the tingles refused to go away.
Abruptly, he dug his comlink from his belt. Rogue Squadron, this is Rogue Leader, he called. Everyone to your ships.
He got acknowledgments, looked up to find Affion's eyes steady on him.
You still think there's trouble?
The other asked quietly.
Wedge grimaced, throwing one last look out the viewport at the freighter.
Probably not, but it won't hurt to be ready. Anyway, I can't have my pilots sitting around drinking tea all day.
He turned and left the bridge at a quick jog.
The other 11 members of Rogue Squadron were in their X-wings by the time he reached the Larkus's docking bay. 3 minutes later, they launched.
The freighter hadn't made much headway, Wedge saw as they swung up over the Larkus's hull and pulled together into a loose patrol formation.
Oddly enough, though, it had moved a considerable distance laterally, drifting away from the Larkus and toward a pair of Calamari star cruisers orbiting together a few kilometers away.
Spread out formation, Wedge ordered his pilots, shifting to an asymptotic approach course. Let's swing by and take a nice, casual little look.
The others acknowledged.
Wedge glanced down at his navscope, made a minor adjustment to his speed, looked back up again.
This book is continued on cassette number 11, side 1. Side 1.